Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
This is At The Turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simon.
Hello, hello. Welcome into another episode of At The Turn. Nick and Joe with you. We're going to air our golf grievances today. Now, I admit, this is stolen from the Festivus episode of Seinfeld, something that aired 26 years ago on television, but it's been rattling around in my brain. We're going to try not to be two old men yelling at clouds, Nick, but it may devolve into that pretty quickly here.
I can't wait.
So please, 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 please rate and review the podcast. Give us 5 stars on Apple, Spotify, wherever you may listen. Write a little blurb. What makes you a little annoyed on the golf course? A thing maybe you shouldn't be that mad about, but gets you mad every time out there. Let us know. Give us 5 stars on Apple or Spotify. With that, it is now time for the Handicap Report. It's brought to you by Blue Tees. Use promo code TURN at checkout. As I mentioned on the last episode, we're recording a lot of these in succession. We actually are recording this one day in real time after the most recent episode. And Nick, I got to thank you because I was debating whether or not to play golf after we recorded our last episode because I had a country club round fall through. And you said, hey, look, you planned your day for it. Go ahead and play some golf, and I'm glad I did. It was quite a day. I'll start with the headline. I birdied 7 of the first 10 holes. Like, even
you were 7 under through 10?
Oh, if only. So I'll take you through the first 10 because they were the most exciting. So I was by myself, which was a little strange. It was Monday. It was kind of a crowded course. So I knew it was going to be slow, and I was fine. I popped my first shot out there, hit my second shot to 15 feet, knocked it in for birdie. Wow, great start to the day. I go to the second hole. It's a short par 4 drivable. I hit it to like 30 yards left of the green, chipped it to like 12 feet, made it for birdie. Cool. I've birdied the first 2 holes in this course before. I didn't think too much of it. On the third hole, my tee shot is perfectly in the fairway. I have a gap wedge in, and somehow I shank it out of bounds. Like,
no.
Straight shank into tall grass that I cannot find. I ended up making a triple, and I thought, all right, well, that's a little humbling. We're still 1 over through 3, no big deal. I get paired up with a couple of bros, par 4 third, hit one in the middle of the green, spun it off the green, rolled in about a 60-footer for birdie. And at that point, I was like, okay, I'm even through 4. I've gone birdie, birdie, triple birdie. And that's exciting stuff. Somehow I make a par on 5, despite having an up and down from like 20 yards to make birdie. I miss like an 8-footer. No big deal. Bogey the next hole. So I'm 1 over through 6 at this point. Then on 7, I hit my approach shot to 4 feet. Make it for birdie. On 8, I hit my approach shot to 12 feet. I make it for birdie. On the par 5 ninth, I think just off the green in 2. I chip it up to 2 feet, make it for birdie. So I've made 3 birdies in a row. I turn in 2 under, and I'm like, all right, well, this is getting a little serious. And I was texting you and Romy at the time, and I decided to stop texting you guys after 8 because I was like, I can't, like, if I go really nuts and shoot a personal record or something, I can't have the pressure of you guys sweating it too. I got to just stop at a certain point. So that's why.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed that the text stopped because like there was a time where like on all these golf apps that everybody was keeping score on where you could like follow your friends live. And like, you know, I didn't do that very often, maybe like 3 or 4 times ever. But it's kind of fun if like you're sitting there working and you know your buddies on the golf course having a good round. You're like, how's Joey doing? So I would have loved that feature yesterday.
So I go to 10. I make the turn. I'm 2 under. I'm like, all right, well, let's just, you know, play a good back 9 and see what happens. Let's just stay, you know, process oriented, not results oriented. I don't hit a good tee shot. I get kind of lucky, get in a good position, and I hit my second 2 a foot, and I tap it in for my 4th birdie in a row. And I'm
what were the guys you're playing with thinking at this point?
So it was funny because I was playing with one guy and his buddy was just driving in the cart with him. And the guy that I was playing with, I could tell he played a lot of golf and he was like complimenting me of my birdies, but like he wasn't trying to ask too many questions or say too many things because I think he knew that like this was like a heater of heater, right? But like, since he started playing with me, they joined me on four. He had seen me make five birdies in, I think, an 8-hole stretch at that point. So he's like, what's going on?
Even by like PGA Tour standards, like by any level of golf on planet Earth, that is an incredible heater. So yes, it didn't take much awareness for this guy to be like, I should not interrupt the no hitter going on here.
And I will admit, on 11, for my fifth birdie in the row, it was tracking right in the heart, and it was two revolutions short for five birdies in a row. And at that point, I'm thinking, like, am I going to shoot 64 with a triple?
This game was so easy.
What's going on? So I par a couple holes. I do leak a bit of oil coming in. Nothing crazy. Like, I was still hitting the ball good. I was just the back nine's harder, and I had a lot more difficult putts on the backside than I did on the front side, and I ended up shooting a 73. So it was... And I shot a 73 with a double and a triple, which is kind of amazing. Seven birdies in a round is my lowest ever. That's the most I've ever made. Even when I shot 67, I didn't do that. So yeah, pretty remarkable day. The handicap did go down a full stroke. I missed the exceptional round thing by one shot. And I did three putt 18. 18's a par three. I flushed it. I was one over. I was one over on par 71. I was one over on the 18th tee, and I just flush a nine iron. And the green is like 45 degrees. So if you hit it long, presumably it's going to suck back, especially if you hit it good. And it did creep back, but like to 12 feet. So I have like the fastest putt in Portland from 12 feet. And I thought to myself, let's just pour this in and shoot 71. I hit it about 8 feet by. The comebacker lips out. And again, it's one of those things that like I didn't, the score says that I sort of got off the rails, but I know that I didn't really do anything crazy. It was just sort of a circumstance of the leaves that I had.
Yeah. Some three putts are like totally acceptable. That one is one of them. If you have a putt that's like so delicate that you know if it doesn't go in, it's going to go, you know, you're not going to have a tap in coming back. That's okay. I mean, I had a three putt the other day. It was from like 45 feet and like, somebody kind of looked at me and was like, ah, bummer. And I'm like, that is just a textbook three putt. Like you hit it to 4 feet in a decent putt and you still have a 50-50, you know, for me, like a 30-70 make rate coming back. So it's all good. That's you can live with that three putt.
I can live with that three putt. It's the lowest differential I've had in 4 years for a round. So I'm really happy.
Differential, by the way?
3.7. So I was pretty jacked about that. I had 26 putts with three putts. Like it was insane. I just made all my birdie putts and a lot of them weren't very far away. So, suffice it to say, I'm pretty happy. I, busted out of work early yesterday and played some golf, down to, an 8.3 right now. So anyway, buy a rangefinder from Blue Tees to celebrate my success. Use promo code TURN at checkout.
My handicap has not changed in the last 24 hours. It's still 19.8. I did not bust out of work early and play golf yesterday. I will not be doing that today or tomorrow either. 19.8. Good for you, Joe.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, it was a good day. Let's complain for the next 20 minutes or 30 minutes. Okay.
Let's do it.
So these are just things that off the top of my head, off the top of your head, really bother us on the golf course. Let's play a game of ping pong here. You want to go first?
I will go first. And a lot of these are things I've been bitching about on the podcast already. So not a lot of new material. We're just aggregating all our complaints into one spot. The 9-hole handicap system, we all know it's broken. We all know it's jacked up. I thought this was going to be a great hack to lower my handicap quickly. I shot a round of 5 over par off for 9 holes, and I thought I was about to be a single-digit handicap. And the USGA assigned me a score of 50 on the back and gave me a middle finger. And I said, this thing is broken. I can't wait to complain about this.
You know, it was funny because I did toy with the ideas. Like, if I just stopped after 9 holes, I would have had 2 under from the tips on the front. And I was like, I don't think the differential would have been lower than 3.7. So it's probably good I gutted it out. And
they would have laughed in your face and give you a differential of like 7.9. You'd be on the phone with Gretchen immediately.
I sent her another email. We'll see if she responds. So, Nick, we're going to get you some answers. I'm going to combine the two of these. I have Space Cadet Marshals and Pace of Play Not Being Managed. I think they're one and the same. I just feel as though most of the time, marshals on public golf courses are just folks that are semi-retired and want something to do. And I would just love to see the screening process for someone who is a marshal at a public golf course. Now, sure, sometimes you're going to get a cool person who has their stuff together, knows that that twosome should sneak out ahead of the foursome, all this sort of high court awareness stuff. The marshal yesterday, look, it was a lot of foursomes. I'm shocked he sent me out as a single. But he sent me out behind four foursomes, and it's like there was no one behind me on the tee. Like, he should have told me just to wait. I don't know. It feels like he made the wrong decision. And again, the round wasn't terribly slow until the last four holes, and it was like comically slow. The four founding members of the senior LPGA tour were literally taking like 30 minutes a hole and then stopped for beers like in the middle of taking 30 minutes on a hole. It was pretty crazy. But marshals who don't really have a high court awareness at the first tee, and then pace of play just not being managed at all throughout the duration of the round. I don't really understand why you have player assistants and marshals, and the courses that I'm speaking of don't really do anything. Why are you out there if not to understand that there's a two-hole gap here, there's 30 minutes ahead there, you're holding up three groups here, and to not actually do something about it, force a group to play through? It's not really that hard to do. And I just feel like courses don't govern pace of play kind of ever in a positive way. I think there are courses that will say, hey, you guys got to hurry up and stuff like that. I don't really know how helpful that is. I think I'm looking for extreme slowdowns. I'm talking rush hour traffic, Nick, that I'm trying to alleviate on the golf course. And I don't think that's really ever done.
No, I think a marshal in 95% of the case is out there as like a token figure. Like, they're a cop. You see a cop, you stop speeding. You don't need to get pulled over by the cop and talk to. You just say, oh, I better go the speed limit because there's a cop. So they think that's going to apply to a marshal. He drives around, he kind of like comes up on your group a few times, got the flag, it says marshal, you know, it kind of gives you a dirty look and you're like, oh, I better get it together. They don't actually do anything. Like you said, they're not actually like managing and like playing on the chessboard that is the golf course and all these pieces on it. They're just like driving out there, having a presence and annoying golfers.
Maybe I've just decided this is my goal for when I turn 70. Like, be for a sure. marshal. Just like, be the best marshal on a golf course. Really just get people moving, make pace of play the most important thing. Boy, that's, I like that. That sounds like a good path for me.
That sounds like where you're going to end up for sure.
All right, what's your next one, Nick?
No chipping on the practice green. This, and I'll combine one. I'll combine two as well. When you show up and you're trying to get warmed up and you just, you know, you got 10, 15 minutes before you need to head to the first tee, and there's a sign on the practice screen that says no chipping, that is such a deflating feeling. And it's so ridiculous. Like, how much damage are you really going to do on a green from like chipping from 3 yards off? Like, just let me hit some chips. Let me see how far it's rolling out. Let me get a little bit of feel. So I'm not standing over an important shot 17 minutes from now being like, God, I hope I don't skull this or chunk it because I haven't hit a chip shot in 8 days.
That's so funny. I always interpreted that as player safety rather than course maintenance. Like, I assume
that's for sure. A part of it too.
Protecting like some ankles. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, the same thing applies. How much damage are you really going to do? Like, okay, don't stand on one side of the green and like lob these shots like 40 yards to the other side of the practice green. Like, have some court awareness. Like sensible people can figure out how to chip on like a not crowded, but like,
yeah,
you know, a putting green where there are several other people practicing without having an issue. Like, it really isn't a problem. And it's so annoying when you come up and see that. And the other one, we're going to get a little bit entitled here. with a couple of mine, but there are not enough practice bunkers. Like, how many courses do you play like on a regular in your rotation? Like 4, 5, 6?
Yeah, something like that.
How many of them have a pretty accessible practice bunker?
Now, are you talking greenside bunker shots or fairway bunker shots?
Well, specifically greenside, I would say, but like, you know, just a place where you can go and practice some bunker shots without sneaking after the third hole.
A third, like 2 or 3 of them do.
Okay. I'm impressed by that.
Yeah. It's uncommon.
Yeah. There's one out by me that, you could go and practice bunker shots over at Palouse Ridge, but like of all the courses I played in Rhode Island and New England, you know, U of I, the other courses I played around here, there's just no like practice bunker shots. And then you know, whenever you go to like, you see golf instruction on like YouTube or wherever, you're reading about it on our favorite websites, you know, Golf Digest and golf.com. It's like, well, nobody practices these bunker shots. It's like, well, guess what? No course. I don't have access to a practice bunker to go and hit shots out of the sand. I can honestly tell you, I've never just practiced hitting bunker shots because I've never been in a facility with a practice bunker.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit spoiled here in Portland. We have a lot of good facilities and also really good practice areas. And I would say Glendevere has a greenside bunker to pitch out of. Stone Creek, out in Oregon City, which I've not played very much this year, despite being in the men's club, they have a greenside bunker and also a bunker that you can hit down the fairway in, so you can practice fairway bunker shots. So again,
you got a bunker on the driving range?
There is basically a chipping green in addition to the putting green, and there's two bunkers, and there's one where you're intended to hit greenside bunker shots, and there's a bunker on the other side of the green that if you basically just turn away from the green, you're hitting down the fairway. So you can either use it as a greenside bunker or a fairway bunker. They did a great job with that facility. It's first awesome. Class. Yeah. Okay. Now look, we've all been guilty of this one, but we got to just stop blaming the golf course for bad luck. The course giveth, the course taketh away. The greens you played on last weekend were fast. These are slow. Hit the ball harder. Adjust. It's on you. Nothing I can. I know this is one we talked about on the podcast before, but man, if you're in the 13th hole and just like, I can't get a putt to the hole today. You've had so many chances. You've hit 27 putts so far. I don't understand why you're not hitting the ball harder. I understand it's frustrating, especially playing slow greens like in July and August and all of that, but you just got to adjust, baby. Ball hit the tree and went out of bounds. Well, I remember last week when that ball hit the tree, went in the fairway. Like, it's all going to even out in the end. You're going to have runs of good luck and runs of bad luck, and that's just part of golf. There is an element of luck in the game. That's just what we all signed up for. So quit blaming the course. You know, maybe blame the golf gods. Maybe take a look in the mirror.
That's true. I remember one time specifically complaining about like a golf course and particularly like a golf course setup, but it wasn't necessarily for bad luck. It was more pace of play. Like, we were playing this course, public course. Like, if you go on Golf Now, like within a 30 or 40 mile radius, it was like the cheapest, most accessible golf course. Like, it was closest to the biggest population. It was the best deal. So like on a Saturday, you're going to get a million people playing. And I went out one day with my buddy, this is out in New England, and all of the hole locations were like in the most treacherous, tedious, like on top of ridges, like could not get a ball to stop there. And like, I cared about my own score a little bit, but I'm also looking around and I'm like, every single group is spending 10 minutes on every green because nobody can get the ball in the hole. Like, this is a valid complaint where the course should probably do a better job. It's not so much bad luck, but it is kind of on that vein of complaining about the golf course as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, conditions are one thing. I think bad luck is probably wrapped up in the course conditions, but yeah, I understand the differentiator you're trying to make there.
All right, I've got one more about practice facilities, and then I'll move on. People are going to think I just spent all my time practicing, and I'm just mad at it.
Just grinding away.
I just grind. I just want to grind. I think range balls should be complimentary, and here's why.
Wow.
We go to – it's like – the analogy I make is like – I don't know if your company has this, but it's more popular now – is unlimited paid time off, right? Yeah. Like, when we go to the Corner Club Open or any golf tournament, you know – for people who listen to this podcast who don't play in that one, you show up, there's range balls on the range. They're usually included in like your tournament fee, and you go down and you hit like, I don't know, 5 to 15, maybe 20 balls, and you feel it. You see some good ones, and then you go back and continue with your day. that's not really an option in most rounds of golf, because you have to buy a bucket, and like even a small bucket's going to have like 40 or 50 balls, and you feel like you have to use all of those balls because you paid for them, and it's just too much to do like before a round of golf to hit like a full small bucket, but you still want to hit balls. So like, I think either with your round of golf, they should hand you a sack of like 15 range balls, or just have balls down there on the range. I get it. They don't want people coming in and logging marathon practice sessions on the course's dollar, but like somehow figure out a way to wrap up like a small warm-up bucket of balls into a tee time so you can see some shot shapes without spending hours in the range before your round.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think once you get to $100 and north of that, you're usually going to get the golf balls included. It's that $60, $70 round on the weekend where it's like, all right, man, just let me hit a couple. Just let me feel a little bit. I'm out here. I'm grinding away. Let me just see if I can find the center of the club face before I shoot 90 out here. Please.
Right. And a lot of people, it's, you know, if you're playing a round of golf on a Saturday, you might be playing once a week. You might be playing once or twice a month. And you don't want to go out there and shank it around your first three holes and feel like I just wasted my one game day of the month or of the week. And now I'm six over through two because like I couldn't find the center of the club face. And now I'm cruising the rest of the way. God, I would have loved to hit 12 balls before we started.
My next one is very, very simple. Just repair your pitch marks on the green. Like if you make a mark with your golf ball on the green, fix that mark, and also fix another one. Find another mark to fix. That's a rule that I've started to live by over the past couple of years. Fix your own, but also if the green is a mess, fix a couple others. Like take the Boy Scout motto. You want to leave it better than you found it. Just fix your ball marks. It's pretty easy.
That's a good one. Okay. This one, ever since I've taken on the Nick Rules flag and bared that, this one bothers me even more. When people encourage playing partners to cheat, you hit a bad shot, they're like, oh, just drop another one, or oh, just take a breakfast ball, or oh, pick that up. You know, I think I'll play by the rules of golf. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I think breakfast balls are bullshit. I don't really know like why people do it. Like, of course there's levels to it, but if you're someone who keeps a number, who plays with some regularity, just accept that you are not prepared and you hit a bad shot, recover, make your bogey or par, move on to the next hole. Like, it's on you that you didn't manage your time well enough to get some practice in. You have to just accept the results at that point.
Yeah. And to go off of that too, when people do these things, when they play multiple shots after they hit a bad one or pick up these putts, and then you see them 2 weeks later, like, oh, I just shot a personal best. You're like, oh, well, tell me more about that. Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm always like, it's too bad. I'll bet you'd feel a lot better about your personal best if you played all your rounds by the rules. Not because, sure, you'd have some high scores that you're not comfortable with, but then you'd really feel good about your low ones.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I don't like questioning people's reporting, but when
not outwardly, but inside.
Of course. When someone reports like, oh, I had an 85, I was like, I bet you did. This one is a little bit esoteric, but stick with me. Insular golfers are groups. People out on the golf course who are disinterested in any sort of interaction, bullshitting with you. I had a lot of this yesterday because I was waiting a lot in the last four or five holes. And there was a, you know, an elderly twosome in front of me. And boy, they were not interested in having any, like, even eye contact. And we were often on the same tee box for 5 to 10 minutes at a time, waiting for the two groups ahead of us on the hole to finish the hole. So we were probably within 100 yards of each other, maybe even like 15 to 20 yards of each other for like 45 minutes yesterday afternoon. And I tried to be like, hey, you guys having fun? They just went, yeah, and turned around, and that was it. And I was like, all right, well, I'll go fuck myself and sit back here on the black tees while you guys hit it 75 yards 15 times and ruin my, you know, 400 round here.
Do you think part of this was they know that even though there was three of you guys playing, only two of you were actually playing, and they didn't want to get paired up with you, so they wanted to avoid conversation to avoid a pairing?
I do think that's a pretty good theory. And as a matter of fact, once it like really slowed down, like slowed way down, the other guys that I was with, they had to bail. They were catching a train to Seattle, and they thought surely they would make it. And then they had to stop after 15 holes, unfortunately. And so then it was just me alone and them two. So, yes, I'm sure they were very weary of, like, oh, God, this guy in the backwards hat. You know, coming over here, trying to talk to us. Let's just play it cool, honey. Nothing's going to go wrong. But it, not even just that specifically, but just like generally out on the golf course when people are like, and I think this is pretty uncommon, which is why I think it catches me off guard and it bugs me so much when folks are not congenial and friendly on the golf course. It's like we've already all won. We're out here. Like, we already did it. We've done the things that we needed to do to spend way too much time out here doing this thing. Let's all be happy that we're doing it. That's my general perspective, and I'm shocked when it's not other people's.
Yeah, I think that's a good take. I'm going to let you take the next one, too, because I stole my next one from yours here, and I'll let you take the lead on this.
Yeah, I don't want to give my ball the hawk, too, every time. You know, I don't want to be spitting out my ball, you know, clean it. I like a good ball washer. And you know what? I don't even need your towel. Leave your towel alone. I got my own towel. Whatever's going on with the towel situation and ball washers, leave that thing alone. Because let me tell you a secret, folks. They're not washing that thing weekly. They put the same towel up there in 1974, and if it's still up there, that's fine. And if not, there's no towel. The water, I don't know where that comes from either. So, like, don't be washing your ball and then eating a hot dog. I think that's a good way to end up spreading COVID-22 or whatever. Just, like, wash your ball. I want a ball washer available, though. I do want a little machine that cleans my ball, ideally on the cart. The little cart ball washers, whoever invented that is not getting enough royalties. Wow. Great job by you. More ball washers. There's not enough of them, Nick.
I agree with that. And then when the ball washer doesn't have water,
oh, a slap in the face.
I hate that. There's nothing worse than you stick it in there, and it's like May, and it's like 84 degrees, and you just feel like... and there's not a drop of water. And drinking water on the golf course. We need drinking water on the golf course. I played a course last year that had coolers all over the golf course, and I asked them when they were going to fill them up, and the guy said they haven't been full in years. Like, hello?
Years.
We're playing golf in like 80 or 90 degree weather. Golf is a game best enjoyed in warm weather. We're out there for 4 or 5 hours. We need to hydrate. I can't carry around enough water from the whole round to keep me hydrated for 5 hours. I need to refill a water bottle 3 or 4 times. At the U of I golf course, they've got drinking fountains all over the golf course. None of them are activated. Like, it's the risk of freezing is over. Just turn on the water to your drinking fountains.
I generally agree, but you make it sound like you're scaling Kilimanjaro. I can't carry all the water I need to survive for this time I'm going to be out here.
I know in your younger days, Joe, you would just bring a gallon of water to the golf course. You relied on nobody, and you just lugged around a gallon of water in one hand and a pitching wedge in the other, and you made your way towards the green.
Carton of cigarettes. That's all I needed.
Exactly. Those days are over, man. I need to bring like a 24-ounce water bottle, refill it 4 times, and we're good to go. Like, all you really need is like one station midway through the front, one station midway through the back, and one at the turn, and you're good.
Such a good take. I've ranted about this before, but I'll just boil it down to the most salient point. Let's say you're on a golf course for 4.5 hours. How much time do you think you're actually hitting a golf ball in that 4.5 hours? 5 minutes?
Like 4 or 5 minutes. Yeah. If you
the most. Yeah, exactly. If you're deliberate. People that talk when it's time to hit, I will never wrap my head around that idea. The only reason this is gonna sound so crazy. The only reason we're talking on the golf course is because I'm not able to hit. Like, yes, I want to know what's going on in your life. But playing golf will take precedent over literally any conversation going on right now. Hit your golf ball when it's time to hit your golf ball. We have 4 hours and 25 minutes to talk. We have 5 minutes of playing golf. Just control yourself. Understand what's happening when it's your time to hit. Prepare prior to when it's time to hit. It's such an easy thing to do, and yet so few people execute this. I just, Nick, help me out. Am I insane?
I mean, it happens from time to time. I don't think I don't run into it that often, but from time to time it happens and you're just like, what are you doing? There's a really good stand-up comedy bit on something very similar that I've been served on Instagram. And I don't know the details and I will completely butcher it. But Perfect. The gist of it is a guy goes out to play golf with his buddy he hasn't seen in 6 months. And he comes home and the wife is like, how's Bill? How's his new job going? I don't know. How's his wife? I don't know. How are his kids? I don't know. He got a new driver.
Yeah, it's Brian Regan. It's the best golf joke. Weren't you out there with him for 5 hours? Did you guys talk about anything? What's new with him? I know he got a new driver. It's so true. It's so good. I will have those rounds where I see a buddy, like a mutual friend of me, Lacey, and Lacey's like, oh, how's Shane doing? I was like, I don't know. He shot 88, made a couple birdies.
It's so true.
All right, your last one, it seems equally insane, and I can't wait to hear it.
It's a problem and a solution. So I brought it up recently that I got booted from the golf course for playing when the grass cutters were out there and the chemical appliers were doing their thing, and I was just trying to have a good start to my Memorial Day weekend. And everybody I've mentioned this to said, yeah, Nick, like, I get that you want to play golf then, but let the course maintenance people do their thing. And I kind of tried to accept that, and I'm not going to accept that anymore. I've got a solution to this. So you go to the DMV and you buy a driver's license, and that gives you permission to go drive on the roads. But it does not give you permission to drive a motorcycle on the roads. You have to have a certain set of education and pass a certain test and pay another additional fee to be licensed to drive a motorcycle. And I think that's what Sunrise Golf should be. Like, I would pay $40 or $50. I would pass a test with certain specific rules of what I should and shouldn't do to get a license to play golf while the maintenance crew is out there at 5, 6, 6:30 in the morning. Because I know that the problem is not that golfers are out there. The problem is the 25 to 10%, the lowest percentile of players who just want to hit into the mowers and who have no awareness. So I think that people should be willing to take their educational course on how to play when this is happening to accommodate the staff and pay a little bit extra fee and be licensed and basically get a morning pass. And I would pay 50, maybe even $75. I'd take a test. I would be courteous. I think that is the solution. I want a Sunrise Golf license.
I actually love this idea. I think we have way too many liberties with people operating motorized vehicles outside of golf. And so I think a more strict licensing system is great, not only for the open road, but for golf as well. I have the same perspective when it comes to airport travel. Like, there should be an A group, a B group, and a C group according to aptitude navigating through an airport, because people are really bad at that too. I just think it comes down to most people know what they're doing. The few and the stupid are ruining it for everybody else. And most people are going to be like, oh, there's a guy doing his job 200 yards away. I'm going to wait for him to do his job and then hit my golf ball when it's safe for him, the guy doing his job. Like,
right. It's not like you're holding up the course at 5:45 in the morning if you're waiting the guy to finish mowing the green before you hit into it.
Yeah, I think that's great. Okay, we yelled about a bunch of stuff. I feel a lot better. I got a lot of stuff off my chest today, Nick.
I think we've got some things here that we've got some momentum behind. I think we can make some real change. I can't wait till you're a marshal.
And you're leading the Sunrise License Group of Idaho. That's going to be a lot of fun.
First, I'll take a small fee and I'll run the educational courses.
It's perfect. We're going to take a quick break and wrap things up. Okay, we're back with the Mad Golfer of the Week. We're going to the Renaissance Club. I think they pronounce it the Renaissance Club. Anyway, it's the Renaissance Club. Doesn't matter. It's in Scotland, the home of the Scottish Open, the home of me very soon as well.
Is this a course you're playing?
This is not. Okay. This is not a course I'm playing, but it's a course that the PGA Tour is playing this week, the tune-up for the British Open. Here's your Mad Golfer of the Week. Quote, it's sad that of all the great clubs in Scotland, the Scottish Open is played on a semi-links like this. I suppose if the PGA paid a decent club all the costs of running a pro event at an amateur members club, then that might change, but hardly likely. Let the PGA play their events at their own club. Get your PGA Tour out of here.
TPC Scotland.
That is the Mad Golfer of the Week. And with that, it is now time for Nick Rules, brought to you by Matchstick Golf. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout.
All right, we're going to visit rule 14.1C, cleaning a lifted ball. This is an extension of our grievances. I think certain rounds of golf, when it's wet and kind of muddy, you play by lift, clean, and place rules. So you can pick your ball up out of the fairway, clean the mud off of it, put it back down. Well, shouldn't any time your ball collects mud, doesn't that make sense that that would be a round where your ball is likely to collect mud?
Had a mud ball yesterday, Nick.
Right. So the course was muddy enough where your ball is likely to get mud. So you would think maybe you should just be able to clean mud balls. I kind of think you should be able to clean mud balls. Rule 14.1C of the USGA rule book disagrees. When you lift your ball from the putting green, it may always be cleaned. There are other times you can clean it as well. When you lift your ball from anywhere else, it may always be cleaned, except 99% of the times you would lift it when checking to see if it's damaged, when you move it because it's in a partner's line of play, when checking to see if it's in a condition where relief is allowed and it turns out that no relief is allowed, or when trying to identify it, except to remove the minimum amount of dirt or mud on your ball to correctly identify it. If there's mud on your ball, just let us clean it off.
Yeah, I think this is quite different than your ball landing in a divot and then wanting to move it out of the divot. I think this is just something that should be happening. Like, mud is a condition of the golf course. I know a divot technically is also, but I don't know, man. The mud being on the ball affects the ball so much more than being in a divot. Just hit the ball better out of a divot. There's nothing you can do to hit the ball better when there's mud on it. It's too random.
It's true. And I think the fact that there are rules like that you can say, oh, if it's going to be muddy today, if you might get some mud balls, we'll just play lift, clean, and place, where you just say you're cleaning all the balls. But anytime your ball has mud on it, then clearly you are playing in a situation where there was likely to be mud on your ball. So it's just kind of counterintuitive from that point.
And that is Nick Rules. All right, Nick's off to Connecticut. He's got a flight to catch, and then we're going to talk to our dear pal, Mark Treblepiece, who runs the Corner Club Open. He's going to help us preview the Open Championship. Talk to you then.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time at The Turn.